Good morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home, Real Talk on Real Estate. My name is Sherry Doherty and I have the pleasure of every Monday morning at 10 a.m. chatting with you all about all things the local real estate market. And by local, I mean Kingston and the greater area. Today, I am on my own again and I thought that it would be interesting to talk to everyone about a career in real estate and what that really looks like. There was the before for me. And this is actually my second career, and I made the switch over right around the age of 50, which doesn't seem unusual for our career. So what I did before really led naturally into what I'm doing now. I worked for a very large insurance company for a very long time, and I did a lot of client management and a lot of negotiations and a lot of customer service, and it was just the next natural progression to combine my passion for homes and my passion for customer service into something that I thought would be a big challenge. Also, the thought of being self-employed is pretty scary, but I also realized that it was time to put my money where my mouth was because I had turned 50 and where was going to be my next chapter or my next generation. And it was one of those things that I had always said, you know, after insurance, I would get into real estate, and then woke up one day in September of 2018 and thought, oh, I guess it's after. I guess I now have to really put my money where my mouth is and get into the real estate industry. So I wanted to share with everyone what that looks like and the pros and cons of being in real estate. I actually did a very thorough pros and cons list before I did decide to jump in because there are lots of pros and cons and there's tons of pros that everybody talks about. So first of all, being self-employed, being fully independent, you can set your own schedule. You can work with the people that you want to work with and not work with the people that you don't connect with. However, there's also a couple of big cons that almost outweighed all of the pros. The big one being, for me, most concerning would be safety. So I am a female and I work typically alone in the real estate industry. I have a fantastic business partner now and a fantastic life partner who very rarely let me do anything alone, particularly if it is a first meeting with someone. So I kind of negated that or managed it or mitigated it a bit by making sure that, you know, the first time I'm going out to meet someone, I rarely ever go alone. And if I do go alone, it's the middle of the day in the middle of a busy Kingston neighborhood, and I've already kind of pre-screened, or there was a connection where a friend said to me, oh, I want you to go meet my other friend. But a cold call off of the internet, I'm zero chance that I'm going for the very first time by myself. So you will typically, in that circumstance, get my partner Rob and or I and or my husband, who will also join me, particularly at things like open houses. You do not want to do those alone as well. And then the other big con as it comes to a career in real estate is unstable income. So there are months when you can make lots of money and there are long stretches of months when you can make no money. And that can be very difficult to manage as a household or as an individual. I am very fortunate that I have a husband who has a stable salary. And so we know for sure how much money is coming in from him on a regular basis. He also has benefits, and that's a beautiful thing as well. And I can manage the highs and lows of when I have money coming in or not based on the fact that we know we have his. So I know that works for us and not everyone has that circumstance. I am not sure that I could stomach it if I was on my own, and I'm not sure how people do who are the primary breadwinner in their households or just don't have a partner who is also supplementing what they're making, but good for them. The other people I'm not sure how they do it is people with young children. So I even thought when I was younger that I wanted to get into real estate, but I always thought that it was something that I would do later in life after I had a little bit more life experience under my belt and when I wasn't managing young children. And that was particularly because your schedule is not your own and you have to be able to go on a whim. If someone calls and they're really excited about a house and they want you to show it to them and you're not available because you have to pick up your child at daycare, then they're just going to call the next agent who is available because they're excited. And you can't blame them, but you would lose business that way. And I know some people who have great support networks is just always something that I wasn't sure how I would have managed at the time. So I'm really happy that I'm in the what I like to call the encore season of my career and of my life. And I don't have small children tugging at my attention. And I have a really awesome supportive partner who will just put dinner on hold or warm for me or bump our reservations by an hour and is really flexible and supportive. And most often will say, oh, I'll just come with you, babe. Don't worry about it. So I find that very interesting. It is a very difficult industry, though, and I will say that what I've found to be the most difficult is not the technical things. So I know that I'm great at customer service. It's always been in my blood, and it's how I was trained and how I grew up. I am good at negotiating. I'm great, really, with attention to detail and understanding contracts. They weren't unfamiliar to me because, much like an insurance certificate or terms and conditions, there's lots of language in there. I used to write them. So flipping over to an agreement of purchase and sale wasn't foreign to me. What the most difficult part is really just been the mental game, because there can be very long stretches of time where you're seeing nothing happen. And that is difficult just on your brain to stay in and stay in the game, because you have life and responsibilities and you want to be contributing to your household. And there's just real life expenses that are associated with being part of it, because you do have to pay your brokerage, you have to pay all your marketing expenses. Sometimes you have admin staff that you have to pay as well, and you're responsible for their income. And so that can be very difficult on the head. The statistic is that 80% of people who get their real estate license are in and out of the industry within 5 years. And I have definitely seen that. I became a licensed realtor in 2019, and I've already seen, so that puts me in year seven, and I've already seen many people who started with me have already left. They, you know, just couldn't hack it with the unstable income that we talked about, or just found that it wasn't for them. You really have to be like on and ready every single day. And so if you're not energized or enthused, your clients can see and feel that. And remember, this is the largest financial transaction of someone's lifetime. They need you to match their level of enthusiasm and energy and excitement towards making a change around it, because it is the most important thing that they most likely own, and you have to be there for it. So I certainly understand that. There are in Kingston just over 600 licensed agents. And what I like to caution people is, when you are interviewing someone for a real estate transaction, I think you should interview more than one realtor. I think you need to find the absolute match for who you want to be working with you on the largest financial transaction of your lifetime. And you do want to really consider who is a career full-time realtor. And no disrespect or disregard to the people who are doing it part-time, but of that statistic that I shared, there's over 600 realtors in Kingston. About 50% of them are either part-time or inactive, and maybe another 50% of the 50% sold one or two houses last year. So there's really a core true 80-20 rule that's happening even in the real estate industry locally. I can name you the top 20 agents who have all of the listings and represent all of the buyers. It's the same people over and over and over again. I'm really proud to say that I'm part of that. We have lots of listings and lots of buyers right now, but it is the same people. So just be careful and make sure it is a question that you ask, because you also need your realtor to go as soon as the greatest new listing comes on the market. They can't say, I'm sorry, I'm at my other job. Again, they need to match your enthusiasm. So no disregard, it does work for some people. However, you know, this is, in our world, you know, a heightened professional career. And I would just put it out there that you wouldn't necessarily want to have a part-time lawyer or a part-time doctor. So you want to think about it when you are interviewing people. So my story of how I got my license, I will share with you all, was that, like I said, I had a career previous to this, and then the fall came of 2018 when I realized it was after, I'm using my air quotes, and I should get to it and get my real estate license like we talked about. At the time, I did it through the Ontario Assurance Institute, the Ontario Real Estate Association, and they have since switched the program to be managed by Humber College. So if you were thinking about it, just look up the Humber College Real Estate Association courses and how you become a licensed realtor. So I'm going to talk about what I went through, not necessarily what the current path is, because happily I'm licensed and have been licensed for many years now. But my personal experience was, at the time, you had to take 6 courses, and I would liken them to college level credits. So full super thick textbook, lots of study and prep and big exams. My first one, I remember, honestly, I hadn't written an exam since college. I did go to college, but that was many years ago, and I hadn't written an exam since college. So I was kind of nervous about it. I knew that I was smart, but I hadn't tried to retain an entire textbook in my head and then go put it on a piece of paper. There was a fantastic system that you could use at the time, and again, look it up if it's still available. It's called Passit, and it literally gave you quiz after quiz after quiz after quiz where you could practice, and then they also had in their old practice exams, so from prior years, the exam for that particular course, and you could actually time yourself and play with those and practice them. So I'm definitely old school. I fully admit it. I liked my paper textbook. I would read the textbook. I would highlight everything that I thought was important. I would do the quizzes at the end of the book. I also then wrote out hand notes, and then I did pass it like 1,000 times. The first exam that I had to write was actually back when they were in person, and I did it at St. Lawrence College. I remember being me, I'm one of those people who likes to be very organized and take as many things off of my head that could be stressful as possible. So I wasn't familiar with the room where it was going to be in St. Lawrence College, and it was on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m., and I knew it was just one more thing I didn't want to be stressed about was finding the room. So I actually went the day before to make sure that I could find the exact room that I was going to be writing the exam in, and that was just one less thing. But it was a little way that I kind of alleviated some of the stress off of myself. So I'm happy to say that I passed that exam, and I passed the other five. I also have a funny story of the last one. So you take, you know, the first one is probably Real Estate 101, and then you take one on like compliance and law and marketing and property types and all sorts of things. But the last one was really, really math heavy. And I always thought math wasn't necessarily my forte, particularly when I was in high school. I was a little nervous around it. But it was interesting because this was the last exam. I had taken a job in between that I didn't love, because even though I was studying full time, you can only study so many hours of the day, and I am someone who needs to be really busy. So I took this job and I was studying, and I was one more exam away, and I didn't love the job, if we're being honest. And I knew that I had 2 weeks to pass this final exam, so I quit the job. Oops. I mean, that's not great, and I don't mean to be grateful, but I quit. I fortunately had some financial cushion that allowed me to do that, and I knew that I really, really wanted to focus on getting through this final exam because it was the last thing standing between me and my real estate license. Long story short, my husband and I were away at a retreat with his industry association, actually, and he was away at a meeting, and I was socializing with the other partners that weren't part of the association, and I knew my mark was due, and I pulled it up on the app that came up from the Real Estate Institute, and I could see on it, it gave you a grade, it said 00, and I literally, like, my heart sunk. I almost started to cry, and I thought that, like, I had got zero on this exam, when in fact, when I blew up the screen, I got 100%. So I was so proud of myself. I was screaming with delight about how excited I was that I had gotten 100% on the math exam, for that matter. I figured I could probably have gotten 100% on the customer service one or on the technicalities portion, but on the math one, I was really delighted with myself. So it was time then to get into the career. So what do you do then? So what I did is actually interviewed all the brokerages. So you have to pick a brokerage kind of to hang your license under their umbrella. And I, you know, off the top of my head, I knew of RE/MAX and I knew of Century 21 and I knew of Royal LePage. And there were a couple of other boutique ones in our area at the time that I didn't know them as well as a household brand name. But I decided that I would interview with them anyways, just because I wanted to see, you know, what it looked like, what their offices were like, what they offered in terms of training and, you know, what their fee structure was, because they all offer a different fee structure. Yes, of course, the brokerage takes part of the commission. And I went out and I had interviews with all of them. And in a very sherry way, I had this giant spreadsheet and it said, okay, here's the pros and cons, the things I really liked about Royal LePage. Here's the things I liked about RE/MAX. Here's the things that I liked about Century 21 and the smaller ones. And it was up to including, like, there was parking or there wasn't parking. something, or the office was a mess, or I didn't like the person who interviewed with me, or I really liked the person who interviewed with me. It didn't always necessarily come down for me to the financial split, because I actually didn't go with the cheapest brokerage. I actually joined the brokerage ultimately that I had the best connection with the broker at the time. Now, a little bit of a funny story was there are, weirdly, multiple Remaxes in Kingston, and it's supposed to be a franchise with a territory, but for some funny reason, there's a couple of smaller ones. And the first one that I interviewed with actually wasn't a fit. I didn't have a fit with the person that I interviewed with, and the office was a little disheveled and it just didn't feel right. And so I had kind of like written off Remax as a brand. And then I thought to myself, like, come on, it's Remax. They've got to have a way bigger office than that one that I went to. This seems weird. So I went back online and I Googled again, where's the largest Remax office in Kingston? And I found they're very much was another one that is very large and has a very strong presence. And spoiler alert, I ended up there. I'm at Remax Finest Realty very proudly. So I went and had an interview with the broker at the time there. And we had a great connection. She was fabulous. And I really, really enjoyed her. Lo and behold, though, 2 weeks later, she announced that she was selling the brokerage to two other gentlemen that I didn't know and hadn't met. So that was a little odd. And I was scratching my head. I'm also happy to tell you that the new broker owners are fantastic. So shout out to Marco and Rob, who own Remax Finest Realty. They have been nothing but 100% supportive and professional. They are fantastic. So I'm happy that I landed there. And you really just have to pick where feels right. Don't necessarily go to the cheapest in terms of a commission structure. You want to make sure that you go to where it's going to feel good in the long haul. Even if it's, like I said, Remax Finest was not the cheapest from a commission structure perspective, but it's certainly been the place that I've been happy to build my career from. So where did I get my first sales from is always an interesting question. I was going to talk to you about my first buyers and my first sellers. And the first buyers were personal friends of ours. And so that's always normally where you start, is with your circle of influence. One of the things the coaches tell you to do is first just tell everyone that's ever known you, guess what? I'm a realtor now. If you have anyone who wants to discuss your real estate needs, please reach out to me. This particular couple was already interested in purchasing a home in the Kingston area. So I had sort of lightly just started to look with them, but I wasn't licensed, so I wasn't allowed to do anything. But because I had that initial great meeting with the woman who originally owned the brokerage, she said, let me introduce you to a realtor who will actually do this, take this across the finish line with you and teach you along the way, which was fantastic. So I actually got to go to showings with them and got to listen to them negotiate and see some of the contract and paperwork, but I wasn't licensed. It's interesting because now I know what I know, but the person that she assigned to mentor me ended up being one of the brokerage owners, which makes perfect sense. She was giving him an opportunity as well to start to stretch his wings in terms of training people. So that was really great. And I will always appreciate that couple for letting me have my first transaction. I'm using lightly, but that was my first experience in helping somebody buy. Now, who were my first sellers? That's a very interesting story. And they will always, always be very near and dear to my heart, because honestly, they knew that I had never listed a house before and they took a chance on me. And that means everything to me in the world and will always mean everything to me in the world. They are still very near and dear friends, and they also are repeat clients. So they were obviously delighted with the service that I provided them, even though they knew they were taking their shot on a new realtor. The funny part of it was, though, we listed their house on, I'm going to say, March 19th, 2020. So we all know what happened in 2020 around the middle of March, the world shut down. So not only is this my first experience in listing a home, this is my first experience trying to sell in COVID. Made my career change in 2018. I got my real estate license in 2019, kind of really launched my business in the fall of 2019. And then, you know, was kind of just trucking along and getting my feet wet and learning a few things. And I helped the first buyers, like I mentioned. And then, you know, came February or March, and this particular couple approached me and said that they would like to let me be their first listing, which, like I said, I was super delighted about. And then COVID happened. So it was really a difficult time because we were navigating a insane market. For the beginning of it, as you all know, they made it seem like if you were going to go outside, there were going to be an apocalypse of zombies outside and we were all going to die. So nobody went outside. So it's very difficult to sell a house when nobody wants to go outside. I got very good, though, at virtual open houses. So if you look back at our old Facebooks, there are virtual open houses. And I will just tour a house for half an hour and spin around. Apparently, according to my kids, I used the word spin around too many times during those and just show you the house because I had to do whatever it took to get this in front of the eyes. These people wanted to make a move. And then we ended up showing houses in, you know, masks and gloves and goggles, and there was all sorts of protocol and etiquette. You couldn't even enter a home till you had filled out a questionnaire about your health status, and you couldn't turn on the lights or open the cupboards. The realtor had to do that for you. It was just a crazy time. And as things progressed, it took a very long time to sell that house because it was a really unique house in a really great area. The world was weird, the market was weird, and it just took a really long time. And they were back and forth a little bit from the city and a home that they had elsewhere. So I had taken on the responsibility of going to turn on the lights and open the blinds and make sure it was all locked up and on the reverse side every single time there was a showing. And now every single time we drive by that street, my whole family giggles like, oh, do we have to go to College Street again? Because we were there way too many times. At the end of the day, though, we happily got that couple into their new place, which they've also subsequently moved from now that I think about it. But we did get them in their new place and we did get the house sold, and I had my first one under my belt. So I will, like I said, forever be grateful to them. The funny thing is, I was really ready for someone to ask me about my experience and how many houses that I had sold, and it never came up. And it was interesting, and I'm not even saying it in a fake it till you make it kind of way. I think that I seemed confident and I seemed mature enough that people assumed I'd been doing this for a really long time. So even the other buyers that eventually came to me and the other sellers never really asked. And what's funny is I had this really great rebuttal prepared that I wanted to say to people because it was fantastic. So I passed it on to a couple of other realtors in the beginning of their career because I want somebody to use these great words that I had come up with. But it just never came up. I guess I presented that I was confident and I knew what I was doing and I just kept going. So then how do you get your business going? That's all well and good that, you know, you've got your license and you've joined a brokerage and you did all the courses and you know all the technical stuff. What do you do next? Because, you know, you can stand on the roof and tell people that you're a realtor now, but until people actually believe in you, until people actually know you, really, it's about the know, like, and trust. What do you do? And for me, it was a little bit difficult because I was always Sherry from somewhere else that I had worked. And that was how I got introduced to this community. That was how I was very well known in this community. And if I wasn't Sherry from there, then I had to reintroduce myself into the community as Sherry the Realtor, which was completely different. And to be honest, if you didn't work at my prior workplace, I probably didn't know you because we were that all consumed with the organization and the internal workings of it. So now here I am, brand new realtor. If you didn't work at my old workplace, I probably didn't know you. And there's this whole community that I need to go reintroduce myself to confidently as a realtor. And I'm going to tell you a quick story because it has a beautiful ending. I just love this story. But to be honest, it was really hard. And I went through a season of change that was pretty difficult for me, even though I knew I didn't want to be at my prior workplace. I was still a little bit lost and kind of having a little bit of an identity crisis. And some days you just don't feel like putting on your big girl pants and going outside and just, you know, putting on a smile and saying, okay, this is me now. I'm going to walk into a room full of strangers. So there's a fantastic organization in Kingston that is run by Gabby Eaton. It's called Women in Business, or Women Mean Business, sorry. And I saw it on Facebook or something. And I decided I was going to go to one of their events. And I didn't want to go. And to be honest, beforehand, I was talking to my daughter on the phone and I was bemoaning how I didn't want to go and I didn't want to walk into a room full of strangers and they all probably knew each other and they were all going to look at me. And she and I walked through the scenarios that we often like to walk through, which is what's the best case, what's the worst case, and what's the most likely case of what's going to happen. So the best case scenario was I was going to walk in and 10 people were going to say, oh my God, Sherry, we were waiting for you to get here. Please give us your card. We want to buy houses from you. That would be the best case. The worst case scenario would be that people would not speak to me. No one would be friendly, and I'd probably go to the washroom really quickly, cry, and then leave. But that's like kind of the worst case scenario. And the most likely scenario was that there was going to be some nice, polite, lovely ladies there that were going to be friendly, and they all felt awkward because everybody feels awkward when you go to networking, particularly alone. And so I talked myself through that and said, okay, but my exit strategy is I'm going to the bathroom and leaving if nobody's nice to me. There were a group of ladies standing at a tabletop and they were laughing and joking. And I also thought, okay, just be confident. So I walked up to them and I said, you guys look like you're having a good time. Do you mind if I join you? And they were like, no, not at all. Come on in. Who are you? What do you do? What brought you here tonight? They were really lovely ladies. And at the end of the evening, one of the ladies came back to me and said, I love the fact that you just walked up to us and said, basically, can I be your friend? What are you guys talking about? She goes, that takes some really good confidence. And I love somebody with that kind of initiative. So I'd like to buy a condo in 185 Ontario Street specifically. And one day when one comes up, please call me because I'm going to buy it with you. I think you're fantastic. Which, amazing, because that's almost the best case scenario that I walked through. So I was kind of pinching myself thinking, wow, I just kind of demonstrated some confidence I didn't even really have. And now I have this lead for somebody who wants to buy a condo in 185 Ontario Street. And 185 Ontario Street is not inexpensive. Alas, I will fast forward, and she had a large home to sell, and she wanted to purchase a condo in 185 Ontario Street, which I did with her a couple of years later, but that's not even the best part of it. The best part of it is she's now one of my best friends, and so it's just so sweet that I pushed myself outside of my comfort zone. I went to a networking event, and I have so many stories about other networking events and things that I pushed myself to do, which this looks like it's going to be a part two because we're almost done and I'm still not done talking. But at the end of the day, you know, not only did she trust me with that, which is a major purchase, obviously, but she became my friend and we're like dear friends now. I think we went to like Easter Mass together or something. We were actually very good friends. And now I actually have another one of her homes up on the market. She's somebody who likes to move a little bit, and I like to help people move a little bit, so that's always fantastic. So I hope that this is interesting information. I will continue this with a part two, because I honestly have a list of things that I wanted to mention to people, but as you can tell, I'm super passionate about it. I love what I do. It doesn't come without its cons. Like I talked about, I will be realistic with everybody. You know, sometimes you have to be really careful about who you're talking to. Your face is all over town, and sometimes you get creepers, and your phone number, your contact information, and often even just your location is available for everybody, so you have to be careful. You do have unstable income, but you also then have this big, beautiful, glorious life and the opportunity to help people with the largest financial transaction of their lifetime, which is such a privilege. And I always make sure that myself and my team remember that it's a privilege every single time somebody chooses to work with us. So if anybody you know or yourself is thinking about a career in real estate, I would be more than happy to have a coffee with you. One of my taglines in the beginning became, I love nothing better than coffee and new friends. And I also just literally love what I do. I hope again that this has been very valuable for you. And I do wish you and everyone you know a beautiful day finding their way home.
The radio show that helps you relax and unwind after a busy day. Ah! Raccoon Radio Show with Gino Alash. Hard rock and heavy metal. Every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Stay heavy.
fill my cup. We sat there and tried to remember our dreams. No such luck, no such luck. So then what? So then what? There are songs to find. No, oh, there's a baby to feed. A rose is a rose is a rose is a crow on its wing. But you and I are here right now. Do you ever wonder how many stars died just so that could be? In the dark when the night comes round. Yesterday and tomorrow keep our joy and our sorrow. I'm the Duke of Earl, you're the star of the counting down.
Soft lights, soft lights. Ooh.
Thank you. That was White Horse, the award-winning husband and wife duo of Luke Doucette and Melissa McClelland, with Two and Only, the closing track to their 2026 full-length album, All I Want Is All of It. And before them, the show opened with another married duo, JT Nero and Allison Russell, who performed together as Birds of Chicago. Now, before Montreal-born Russell became a Grammy Award-winning solo artist, she and her husband released three full-length studio albums and one EP. And we heard the title track to their 2018 album, Love in Wartime. Hello, everyone, and welcome to No Chords Barred, 90 minutes of music by artists from around the globe covering the past five decades. Now, in this episode, we go as far back as 1985 and serve up a healthy blend of mainstream and lesser-known artists. Now, depending on your age and music knowledge, however, some of those mainstream artists might be unknown to you, as most of them first hit the scene 20 or more years ago. Now, the idea is to scramble it all together to show that despite music coming from different eras, it can still sound good alongside each other. So we'll move into the next set and start with Calgary-based Marielle Buckley. From her 2025 Juno Award-winning album, Strange Trip Ahead, this is Anvil.
Thank you. Traffic's at a standstill. On the edge of where you're coming to town. My stomach, there's an anvil. Waiting for the truth to come out. Guess it's too late to cancel. Where would I even go if I did? Here are pictures on the mantle. Reminders of a life we live in. And all the time we fought to carry. When the world's hanging us down. What's the over, under, on another 200 pounds? Everything is shutting me down. My stomach, there's an anvil. And there ain't no way of taking it out.
What you love for me was a bitter pill. But I swallowed hard and sat there soft and still. And every time I tried to trust someone, I would come undone. And I was theirs to kill. Well, I'm gonna have to find my own way now. Well, the kings and queens did not. So we went along with the show. But after some time I began to find the cracks, where all of the money goes and what they sell us back. And sometimes what's poster and I hung it up. I was a poser, but I was close enough. Patched his name upon my jacket sleeve. Put on my faith in ideology. But sometimes what's lost cannot be found. Sometimes your heroes let you down. When the lights come up, you'll see it for what it was. And we're gonna have to find our own way now. And don't I wish that I was still a kid. And I did not learn about the things I did. Cause weren't the curtains high on all things big? And ain't they coming down? Once I heard the sound, so clear and quite profound. Once I held it in my hand and swore I'd never put it down. But when the lights come up, you'll see it for what it was. And we're gonna have to find our own way now. Yeah, we're gonna have to find our own. Everything was fine till time broke that day. I looked into the eyes of a woman I couldn't find. Scared to death, I ran until I was out of breath. I found comfort in the meadow, stargazing. We'll be right back. still.
That was British singer-songwriter Tessa Rose Jackson with the song Fear Bangs the Drum, which can be found on her 2026 album The Lighthouse, the first album she released under her own name, having recorded previously under the moniker Someone. She was preceded by the Boston alternative rock band Phi Lacey with Angels in the Others from their 2026 debut album Elephant in the Room. And the Americana supergroup Fantastic Cat with Sometimes Your Heroes Let You Down, a track from their 2024 album Now That's What I Call Fantastic Cat. And the set began with Calgary's Marielle Buckley with the song Anvil from her 2025 album Strange Trip Ahead. This is No Chords Barred, hosted by me, Donald Finnegan. And don't go away, so I'll be right back after the break with more music.